5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. The look it was giving me.
Seven, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better...
Sheriff?
Zia!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
This son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Appreciate you guys showing up. Got a great show planned for you this evening. Going to be welcoming Dan to the show. And Dan actually has been on the show in the past. It was back, I want to say, in the 80s, the episode in the 80s. Dan had come on, talked about a roadside crossing he had seen. Very interesting encounter. But he was actually out with a friend of his. They ran into a Sasquatch in the middle of the night. Dan talks about what they ran into. And his friend's pretty shook up about it, which is definitely understandable. But Dan has sent me some of the best footprints, photos I've ever seen, tree breaks I've ever seen, just a ton of stuff. And Dan's not really a researcher, but he's just out. This is stuff he runs into when he's out hunting. And he always sends me stuff from time to time. And this encounter happened to these guys just a couple nights ago. And Dan had called me up. We had a long conversation, so I welcomed him back to the show. Very, very fascinating encounter. I really hope you guys enjoy it. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you've sent me your encounter in the past and I haven't responded, please just send me, hey, Wes, give me a call, send me your number. Since we moved servers, I've been trying to keep up with some of the emails, and so it would help me greatly. Again, if you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email, wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out the website, sasquatchchronicles.com. Well, let's jump right into it tonight. I want to welcome Dan to the show. Dan, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate you being here tonight.
Hey, not a problem. I'm just glad that maybe I can share some of the things, you know, that happened, let people know.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're here, too, and it was an interesting encounter you had the other night. If you would, for the audience, just kind of start from the beginning. Tell them what you guys were out doing, and just walk them through like you and I talked the other night, Dan.
Okay, a buddy and me were going to go coon hunting, and, you know, we hunt locally here pretty all over, and this was some new ground next county over, and real good friends with the owner of the land that we were going to be hunting on, and it butts up to a wildlife management area, you know, government land. And we went over there. It was about a 25-minute drive over there, maybe a little longer. The route we took was certainly short, but we get over there, and, you know, we cut the dogs loose, and it's a fairly dark hollow and long and goes up into a ridge line, you know, like I say, the backside butts up in the government land. Well, the dogs strike go out of here and treat, we use what they call GPS tracking systems, you know, which is Garmin, on our hounds, and they can do they can even show you the dogs on the tree sometimes, you know, but it showed the direction the dogs were in, and they were on the back side of the ridge, you know, adjacent to where we're hunting, and we tried to go into them a certain way, and we couldn't, so we went up to the top, up on the ridge, and there's a road back in, I don't know, some years ago, they'd done a type of mining called auger mining, and they would go around the mountain face in the ridges, and they would drill like a big auger bit into the side of the hill, get the coal out. Well, this is what we were traveling on, old road, and we found an opening in a low gap in the ridge line that, you know, we could hear the dog then, and he was down in there to the right where we were facing. Well, we thought we could get closer if we stayed on the road and went around towards him because the road continued in the direction he was in. But as it happened, we couldn't, so we had to try to find a place to climb up the high wall and get through to the backside. Well, the Garmin lets you know at one point we got within 400 yards of him at the Garmin show, but he was on the backside of the ridge, so we had to climb up the high wall and got, you know, I'm talking holding on to tree roots, grabbing trees to get up and over to get through. Well, we get through, and as soon as we get over through the ridge line there and cross over to the other side, it's like a whole different area. It's a bunch of outcroppings, a bunch of big boulders, just unbelievable. But like I said, you know, at that time, I don't think we was on the government land. We were still on the private property. We hadn't hit the boundary yet. And we hear the doggies straight down the point from us, you know, and so we cross through and we start down that way, and I hear something. I hear something behind us, just like a thump. Maybe, I don't know, just, you know, something caught my attention. We continue on down. Well, before going any further, Wes, I've known about these people, beings, whatever, I don't know how to put it, these whatever, since about 1976, here where I live in the mountains, and, you know, we've been aware of them all our life. Well, I kind of had an idea of what was going on, but I didn't, so I continued on. Well, we were going down the point, and about 100 yards or so, we get down to earth. My buddy says, "Hey, Dan, your dog, he's coming in behind us." I said, "No, what makes you think it's my dog, Daniel?" He said, it's you know how he comes through the brush sometimes." So I said, "Yeah." Well, I said, "Look at the Garmin." He looked at the Garmin, and it showed both dogs still in the same direction in front of us. Well, he got that look on his face. It kind of spooked him a little bit. But I said, "You know, could be a coyote, could be anything following us in, could be a cat, because we do have cats in this area." We continue on down to get the dog. My dog, all of a sudden, just goes ape crazy like he's bait up on something, but takes off running a track. And people who hunt know what I mean. He was bawling. He was, you know, started out like he was bait up on something and took off running a track, running after something. I figured, well, maybe the coon jumped out. But my buddy's dog stayed there on the tree, never moved. All right, well, my dog went, he hushed, didn't hear no more of him. We get on down to the tree, shine the tree over, don't see anything. We latch up my buddy's dog, we start back up out of there, and we're going out of there, and the way it lays, the point comes down in between two bigger points, and it's kind of like a hollow. Well, I was looking at the skyline and using it as a guide to go back to the right instead of the way we come through, because there's no way we could carry the dogs back down what we climbed up to get there. We was going to cut back right-handed and come back through the low gap where the truck was. Well, I'm looking at the skyline, and I asked, we was traveling a little bit up the point, and I asked Daniel, I said, "Turn your light out, Daniel, and let me see where we're at." And, you know, I cut both their lights out, and when I looked at the skyline, and we could tell, you know, by the land, how it laid, where we were at. He said, "No." And I asked him to do it again, and he put his hand over it, and then he took his hand away. "No, I ain't doing it." I said, "Daggone it, Daniel." But I was about to cuss, and I turned around to look at him because he was behind me. And when I turned around, he turned around behind me and looked, and maybe 25, 30 yards down the point behind us, there stood him. I guess is the best way to put it. You could see like a little bit below his knee and down to his left foot sticking out on one side of the tree, and he was peeking around the other side looking dead at us. I mean, the color, it was like a auburn. It just, there it was. I'm 45 years old, and I've seen two in my lifetime. My buddy freaked. I mean, he literally lost it. I've done everything I could do, because I've been in situations in my life where you got to stay in control. If you don't, then people are going to get hurt, or you're going to get hurt. So I tried to calm him down. He was wanting to take off in the wrong direction. He just got emotional, very, very emotional on me. And I kept him composed enough, turned him around, said, "Daniel, let's go. The thing that gets me, Wes, is the dog never alerted to it. The hound never let on the first time that thing was there behind us. Why, do you reckon? Because I've had experiences where dogs try to jump in the back of the truck, get up under the truck, try to knock me down, stand up under my legs when they're around. But this dog never even knew it was there."
That's very interesting. It's hard to say. It's really hard to say. Like you said, most dogs freak out. They'll either go in attack mode or they want to run. Most of the time they want to run. They want nothing to do with these things. So you guys turn around. Can you describe for the audience what the face looked like? Because I thought that part was fascinating.
I hate to use this reference, but it's the best way I can. It looked like it was sleepy or it had Down syndrome. That's the way it looked. It's just facial express. It's just feature. Big jaw. I mean, this guy, it just, I'm assuming it was a male, because I never had a chance to see no genitalia or nothing, because I was too busy. You know, I figured as close as it was, if it wanted something to do with us, it already would have. That's how I felt about it. And being in situations before, all I wanted to do, I thought to myself, you know, "Oh man, we just want to get the dog and get out of here. That's it." That's how I felt. And I got him composed enough, and we was going up through her, you know. But its face, its nose was big and wide, and it's almost like it had a receding hairline. Though that's the thing about it, it's almost like it didn't have hardly any hair around its forehead, but it did. I don't know. It's something. It's something I can't. I wished I could. I could describe it, but I don't really know how to go about describing it. That's the best way I could put it. It's just something that, you know, I could. I don't know, Wes. I don't know what to say. I really don't.
No, and I understand that. And that's pretty common, because it's hard to, what do you compare it to? It's not like there's a known animal out there to compare it to. Would you say it looked more human-like? Would you say it looked more apish?
Definitely nothing apish about this. This looked like a huge, huge man with hair all over him. I mean, just like you would see, the best way I could put it, to me, like a mobster in a roaring 20s. That's the kind of look he had on it. A tough, mean, weathered look. His face was like leather from what I could see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was definitely nothing primate about it. It looked like a huge man is what it looked like.
Did the expression change, or what did the creature do when you guys turned around and hit it with the light?
Nothing. That's what gave me the sleepy Down syndrome looking type face. It never done nothing, because as soon as we hit it, it was my buddy freaked, and we went from there. You know, I never looked back at it, never turned back around. Walked straight up the point. The dog never, he stayed tight to Daniel. It's a male coonhound, and he's pretty tough. But he stayed tight to Daniel, but he never alerted to it like I had seen dogs in the past do. So we get up, you know, I'm kind of at a loss. I am, because I'm kind of at a loss, because I was mainly worried, concerned, you know, that this could go bad quick. And but the expression, like soon as I turned around to him, he turned around. I don't know if he heard something to make him turn. Don't know. I never asked him that question. Why did he turn around? Because he was already, as soon as he seen the garment and know that big blue was out in front with his dog, and we was hearing something behind us, it spooked him. You know, that got him going. And then I don't know why he turned, but I was turning, and I was actually, you know, I was like, I was daggone it, Daniel, turn. And when I turned, both lights hit him, because we was right there together, and the point, you know, he started, like I said, he got very, very emotional, and I had to get him up through there.
Yeah. You guys turn, you guys see this thing, and you both have your lights on it. Your friend starts freaking out. What happens next?
Get him composed and get straight up through there. We just start, we take off, going out, you know, he was basically hugging me. He was staying that close to me. There wasn't no getting around it. It was just get up through here, get back to the truck. And I listened, and I never heard it. Like I say, once we seen it, turned, he freaked out, got him up through there. I never heard it no more.
How tall do you think the creature was?
You know, I'm going to guess between 7 and 8 feet width. And I hope to go back there and do you know, look at it during the day, because I can take you right back to where it was at right now. But only way I would ever go back there would be during the daylight hours.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And it's a good thing you kept your friend calm. It's kind of like I was saying, sometimes in these situations, it's kind of, I put it in the same category as kind of dealing with a big cat. Cats are, if you're cool and calm, generally mountain lions and large, you know, cougars will leave you alone. The moment you start running, it's just like your household cat. Something clicks in them and they want to chase you. And I kind of think that's how these creatures are. You know, they might be curious, but the moment you start running, now you've become prey. But you, as you guys were walking out, something kind of interesting happened. Do you want to tell us what happened?
Certainly. We was coming up the point, you know, and I was just, come on, Daniel, stay, you know, let's get to the truck. We'll get the dogs loaded. We'll get out of here. No big deal. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's going on. Let's do it. And we come up the point and get into the low gap right back up onto what I'll call the auger road. Well, the road is clear, but on the sides of the road is very dense. You know, you've got little cedars and everything else. Well, we clear out, and we're walking along, and we're about, I want to say, probably no more than 70 to 100 yards from the truck, if that much. And there's one place where it had cedars on both sides of the road, you know, because, like I say, they reclaimed these roads, but they kept them clear for vehicles to get through. But where they reclaimed it, they would pop, you know, trees would pop up and grow everywhere. Well, we're going through there, and all of a sudden, Daniel screams and shoots by me. And I don't mean he run by me, he walked by me. I mean, he comes by me in the air going, oh, my God, oh, my God. I'm like, what's wrong, Daniel, what's wrong? I thought, you know, he might have got snake bit or something. I don't know. He said, it got me. And I'm like, what? He grabbed my light cord. It almost got me. I said, Daniel, what are you talking about? Well, he says that something grabbed his light cord, and not only grabbed his cord, but shook it. And I don't mean just shook it as it grabbed it. I mean, he said it grabbed and jerked on it and yanked, shook it like you would a can of spray paint, is the way he put it to me. I didn't see it, but oh my goodness, he jumped by. I mean, and that's when everything really, really, really got interesting, because he really got emotional then and took off towards the truck. He hit the key, set the alarm off, all kinds of stuff, trying to, you know, just make all kinds of noise. And he said it grabbed it and shook it and almost jerked his cord out, jerked his hat off. And he just, I turned around, looked, there wasn't nothing there. But who's to say, you know, because like I say, he said it reached out and grabbed him, grabbed his cord. But I don't know. I turned and seen, didn't see no trace of nothing. And I had my light on, but it where we was at, just as soon as you step off the roadside, it's dense. It could have easily done it. And he's traumatized. That's the best way to put it. It's got him messed up.
Yeah, and that does happen, especially after an encounter like this. You know, as I was thinking about your encounter the other night, a couple things I was thinking about. Whatever grabbed him probably wasn't the same creature you guys saw. It might have been another one as you guys were heading out.
Mike, you know, Wes, it's a great possibility because the color of the old boy I seen and going on past experience and going on other information and other sources available, it couldn't have been. You know, I mean, going by what I've been told by certain friends, how they get real dark when they're young and they turn a different color as they grow older. Well, he was like almost like the color of an orangutan, but darker, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, that does make sense. It's interesting. A couple things about the encounter fascinate me. I think a lot of people, just so they understand, as they're listening to you talk, this wasn't your first rodeo running into these creatures. You know, some people listening might think, well, why is this guy so calm? And you've had, like you said, you had encounters. I've had you on the show in the past, and I haven't posted them yet, but you know, you've sent me some pretty good footprints that you're finding out in that area. I mean, some of the best footprints that I've ever seen, some fresh footprints too, that you're finding out in the areas you go hunting. Did your friend not believe in this prior to this, or is it just a shell shock for him?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, he was a skeptic. He was, and the ironic thing about that, Wes, is see, we worked together for years. You know, we've known each other all our life. Well, we've traveled. We've been in Montana working together and you know, I would ask questions to certain people that we got to know out there, and that was around the Bulls Mountain area. And you know, they would laugh at me. He was one of them that would make fun of me, and that was my nickname, Bigfoot, because, you know, all my life, I'm not a researcher by no means, but like I said, I've known about, had dealings with, and familiar, by no means know anything, but familiar with these beings, and people around here, they call me, you know, and tell me stuff. But he was a skeptic, and that's not the first time that I've had people with me that were skeptics, and by the time we got back home, they were believers, you know. And that was nothing that was provoked. That was just out hunting. You know, we here where I live, we coon hunt a lot. And they, you know, you would be surprised what you see in these mountains at night. But now he was a skeptic until then. And then he goes to tell me, well, the owner of the property told him that one of the guys that run the gas wells, that works for the gas company here, that run the gas wells and stuff on his property, had something happen, wouldn't go into detail, and refused to go back on the property and even transferred from the area. And, you know, so that's the place that he and I went to. But he didn't tell me that until after this happened to us, and he talked to the property owner, and then the property owner started telling him, you know.
What do you think the creature's intention was?
I have no idea. I believe he was curious, but the dog was treed. The dog was, you know, he was treed for a good while before we got to him. He was, and I don't know if they were waiting to see what was going to become of the dog, because as soon as we climbed up the high wall and crossed over, I heard something. And going in, he picked up on hearing something, and that's when he stated about my hound, you know. So I don't know, but now, looking back, and I've looked over the area through Google Maps and stuff, and you know, this place is abundant with elk, deer, wildlife, and it's got everything that anything to survive. It's got everything that you would need, because it's on the backside where we were at is a lake, the headwaters of a lake. You know, you have fields, you have agriculture, you got hay, corn. You have plenty of wildlife, deer, elk, you know, fish, lots of berries, lots of stuff from the forage. And it just, looking back on it now, it hits me like a ton of bricks. It's the perfect place because the houses are they're scarce. You know, there's certain, and everyone that lives there is very protective of what they have because of the abundance of wildlife. And they're pretty closed mouth. But now, its intentions, just curiosity, that's all. But now, you know, whenever he said that happened about the light cord, that really, that sent him over the edge. And that got me to thinking, you know, are they messing with us? Is this messing with us? Because for something to be that close to you and put hands or even touch, then, heck, just why? Would it be just messing with us? I don't know.
One thing I'll say about the whole thing is I think you, like I said, I think you probably saved your friend's life. I think if you would have took off running, that would have been it. I think they would have given chase. But I tend to agree with you. I think it might have been curiosity. You know, I talked to a guy who this happened. It happened in the Northeast, but on the Canadian side. And what had happened was a guy went down to go fishing. I'm trying to get him on the show. He went down to go fishing. Something had actually gotten into the cabin when he went down there. It's basically just kind of a mountain man's type cabin. Something had gotten into the cabin, hadn't really taken in anything, but he saw these muddy footprints. Whatever it was had gotten into his cabin. He was thinking, oh, some guy out, you know, walking around the mud broke into his cabin, but he said the feet were huge. And so he goes out, he thinks nothing of it. You know, he's in his early 20s, he's full of testosterone, and thinks if there's a guy out here and he wants to fight, I'll give him a fight. So he gets on his four-wheeler, heads down to go fishing, and he keeps hearing something in the brush. And so he thinks it's probably a bear, decides it's enough, reels everything in, gets back on the four-wheeler, and as he's heading out, he said this huge arm reached out, almost like trying to clothesline him off of the four-wheeler. But he said...
Holy!
Yeah, he said the hand was about the size of like a catcher's mitt, and it was this huge hairy arm that stuck out. And he said it wasn't a bear. It was like this huge human-like arm that stuck out to... And so it made me wonder, you know, I mean, if that Sasquatch really wanted him, it could have just easily have taken him off that four-wheeler, and that would have been it. And it almost makes you wonder, well, are they messing with him, or are they... you know, that makes me wonder about what happened with you guys. I would almost be willing to bet it was another creature that reached out, probably saw that thing dangling and probably thought it was going to snag it. And then it realized it was hooked on, you know, as he screams, it probably let go. You know, that's what I envision happened.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, it had to be. It had to be. I mean, you know, that's all I could gather because I don't want to say I've dwelled on it, but I've talked to him. You know, I really wanted him to tell his experience and tell what happened that night, and he's just not ready. He don't even want to talk about it. He says he still has nightmares about it, you know. And I gotta respect his wishes. I mean, he's a dear friend, but I think in a way it might have hurt our friendship because of this happened. And I have talked to him about it, and I, you know, finally he just told me I don't want to talk about it no more. You know, okay, if you're ever ready, let me know. Because, Wes, I know from experience, it helps to talk about it.
I would tend to agree with you on that. You know, a lot of people I've talked to on the show have held it in for 20, 30 years. I remember I had this one guy on one time, and he said, Wes, I took up drinking because I didn't want to talk about it. I thought I could make it go away and just forget it never happened. And he's like, I basically became an alcoholic because of it. And, you know, and he hadn't told anyone his encounter for several years. And after him and I talked, he's like, man, I wish I would have done that years ago. But everyone kind of has to deal with it in their own way. And it's like I told you, if your buddy wants to give me a call off the air, private conversation, that's always open to him. I'm happy to, not that I'm anyone to talk to, but he's always welcome to give me a call if he just wants to talk. Now, I know you've been finding stuff out in that area when you were hunting. What kind of stuff are you finding? I'm just curious. You talk about tree structures. I know you've sent me some really good footprints I need to put up on the blog. But what kind of stuff are you finding out there?
Here in the last little bit, a lot of twists. A lot of breaks, but twists, you know. And some teepees. I've seen a couple places local, and I say local, not far from my home here, that you'll have 20, 25-foot logs, say 8 to 12 inches in diameter. They'll be 20 feet up, laying horizontally in the trees, and I don't mean widowmakers that fell out and lodged. I mean these were placed there, and I've got pictures of those. I've got pictures of markers, 30-foot logs, placed, wedged in between limbs. You know, there's no people. It would take four or five men to do what these are. Found some pretty neat footprints. I found one track, 19 inches. Another one, 13, and one 9. All three in the same area. I don't know if it may be a family. Like I say, I'm no researcher. I'm no expert. It's just I have been aware since the late 70s of what's going on here. And I have something I'd like to share with you, Wes, an experience that happened right around, I think it was right before Christmas. Right around Christmas. Me and another friend of mine were out coon hunting here locally. And he's got a technique where he trains a lot of dogs that he's got a tractor tire nailed up on a tree, and he fills it with hoe corn. And the coons come in and they feed off of it, deer, you know, whatever. Well, this is a pretty good feeder that he's had, and it's, you know, he's kept it going for a while. And so he goes up one morning, and it's empty, and he fills it up. And he and I go in that area hunting that night. We get out. I've got a couple of young dogs with me, a couple of pups. He's got his old dog. I leave the pups in there because we wanted to, you know, we wanted to see if we could get the old dog to tree one, or local, just to see what was going on. Well, we get her out, and he casts her through there, and she turns around and comes back to him, scary acting. And he gets her, and he walks her. He said, "Now, come on, Kate." He walks her, and he casts her again. This time she goes, and she gets up under the truck, and he's got a 08 Dodge four-wheel drive sits up high. And so he gets her, and he said, "Now, I ain't going to put up with this, Kate." He thought she was being a little ornery. So we walk her out there, and you walk out behind this little knoll where the feeder's at. And we get out there, and it looks like a playground. It's the best way I can put it. It looks like a playground. There's so many little limbs, 8-9 feet tall, leaning against trees, little bitty teepee structures. And this is on a bench where the feeder was, and he swears that he didn't notice it before. Well, we get out there to where the feeder's at, and his dog is cowering by him the whole time. That's why I said what this dog done the other night didn't make sense. But his dog is cowering by him, and he's turned her on bear and everything. I know that to be true. He didn't know that she would get after it, but he's turned her, and she struck bear and run him and treat him. Well, she's scary, and the feeder that he has, that he had put full, I think he said almost 30 pounds of corn in that morning, was all gone, and rocks from the size of golf balls up to baseballs were put in place of it, full up just like the corn had been. And I witnessed this myself. The corn, you know, he had put the corn in that morning, and by 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock that night, every bit of the corn was gone, and something had placed. And I say something had placed rocks from golf balls to the side, maybe softballs might have been one of the biggest ones, in that same tire. All right. That gave him the willies, and that I already, you know, I'd already seen what I needed to see, and we were walking back to the truck. He cut the dog loose. Well, she run and tried to jump up in the back of the truck with the tailgate up and couldn't do it. So she stayed there waiting. Well, he loads her up, and he said, "Something ain't right." As we're getting in the truck, a tree, there's no wind, it's a calm night, you hear a tree was either broke or pushed over. I don't mean a limb, I mean a tree. And we got out of there. And he told me, he said he thought he heard something over there, but he was a skeptic until that night when he seen that, all those rocks and that feeder. And I'm talking a small tractor tire. He said he put 30 pounds of corn in it. And every bit of it was gone. Well, from that night on, he started relating stories to me where he hunted a lot by himself, and he'd been followed out of the hills many times. You know, and he started telling me he's no longer a skeptic. He's a believer. I just wanted to share that story with you.
No, I'm glad you did. And that's an amazing story. You know, it's I would have been watching that dog the whole time. You know, the dog reacting that way. I'd been like, it's time to go. This dog's freaking out. You know what I mean? But it's interesting you say that. I had another hunter who I just recently spoke to, and he said something had taken all of his deer feed out and filled it full of rocks. I don't know if it was a tire or what he was using for the deer feeder, but he told me the same thing. He goes, I've never seen one of these creatures. He goes, but I filled it full of a lot of feed for a deer. And he goes, I came back the next day and all the feed was gone and it was full of rocks. And I'd never heard that before. You just told me that.
Well, that solidifies what my suspicion the whole time. I mean, the structures that I seen on that flat, it's like a little bench for about probably 70, 80 feet there, and it looked like a playground. That's the best way I could put it, Wes. And he swore to me, you know, that he didn't notice that morning as he was going in. And right by the feeder, about 3 feet tall, was a TP structure, just a little structure. You know, I hadn't seen the flat before he put the corn in and stuff. You know, it'd been a little bit before we'd hunted in there. You know, I don't know what it'd been previously. But now he swore to me that he didn't remember it being like that when he come in that morning, because we was getting ready for a big hunt that was coming up. And it freaked him out when the corn was gone and all the rocks were there. And then when I seen that, I'd never witnessed anything like that before in my life. But I know he wasn't lying to me by the way he was talking to me. I've known him all my life since he was 4 years old, and he swore he put 30 pound of whole corn in there, feed corn, and it was all gone, and then there was nothing but the rocks and stuff in there. But the tree part, that was pretty unique, and it was back in the direction that we come from. You know, we never heard nothing. He said he did. I never heard nothing, but the tree part, the tree being pushed over, no wind, that was definitely something to remember.
No, I bet. I bet, you know, hearing trees fall, and, you know, trees fall sometimes in the forest, but it just kind of adds to everything else that happened, and it's pretty rare that trees just kind of topple over, you know, like you said, unless there's major wind or whatever. It makes you wonder what you guys were in the middle of, you know, especially with the way that dog was acting.
I get ridiculed a little bit because I don't want to go hunting by myself, you know, at night and stuff. And I would love to go back to some of these places that I've had occurrences and had things happen. You know, like I said, I've been growled at. I've had stuff thrown at me. But I won't go by myself. And I've reached out to certain individuals here close to where I live, but haven't had any warm response or anything. And you know, if I could just get had someone that because all the guys that believe now that's been with me, they don't want nothing to do with it. That's it. You know, such as my one buddy, he don't even want to hunt no more. And I've got so much to share here. It's just I'm not going to do this on my own. I've learned a long time ago, it's not wise to be in the woods by yourself at night. Armed, unarmed, it doesn't matter. It's not wise, because you can bet if there's a booger around, you'll know.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. What part of the country are you in? You don't have to give the exact location.
I'm the eastern. I don't care. I live in eastern Kentucky, Wes.
You have some good evidence. You have some of the best evidence, you know, some of these researchers, I think, would die for, with some of the footprints. And it's interesting to look at some of the footprints you sent me, because they have that Fred Flintstone kind of a boxy look to them that you'll see out here in the Pacific Northwest, you know, very, not square. Square is not a great word to use, but just real boxy looking, big, huge toes. And that's kind of what we find here in the Pacific Northwest. I know if you get down to like Texas, they're a little bit skinnier. They're not quite as big, or as wide at least.
I have a lot of stuff I could share, you know, send you some pics and stuff and share with you, Wes, if you would want me to. And I have, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I haven't shown anyone, you know, that I think people might find interesting. You know, I'm not here to prove or disprove anything. I know what's there, you know, and I don't try to make anyone believe. I don't try to do anything like that. It's just, I'm aware of what we're dealing with, and it's unnerving. It's unnerving. I catch a lot of flack, you know. And Wes, sometimes when I'm hunting, when I get out of the vehicle, I'll see what kind of feeling I get before I go any further. And I know that sounds crazy, but I've been in situations, as soon as you get out of the vehicle, I mean, you know, you don't need to be here.
Yeah, no, that's not crazy at all. I know exactly what you mean. And it's, I don't know what that is. I can't put my finger on what that is, but I know exactly what you mean. Because I do the same thing. Sometimes I'll go into areas and I feel fine. And then sometimes I'll, you know, the hair on the back of my neck is going and I can't tell you why. I haven't seen anything yet. Hadn't heard anything yet. I just don't like the area and don't want to be there. It's a weird feeling, isn't it?
It is. It would it be a similar thing? I know it. Back whenever I was a youngster, I got bit. We used to swim in the rivers and creeks here around home, and I got bit. I climbed out on the bank one day and got bit by a copperhead. And it made me sick as a dog. And I know a lot of people might not believe this, but I have witnesses. I wasn't taken to the hospital, and I laid, puked. I mean, I laid and was sick for probably a good 20 to 22 hours. And you would just have to know my upbringing to know I wasn't going to be taken to a hospital. Anyways, now it's like you can almost sense when a snake's around. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I don't know if it's a fight or flight or a sixth sense that we have, but in situations, you know, no, you don't need to hunt here. You need to leave. I've been in that a lot. I've been in that a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, in the area that you're in, you know, those Sasquatches have probably watched you guys on several occasions at night hunting. Does it ever change your mind? Do you ever stop and go, God, I'm not going out there anymore? You know what I mean? I'm.
There's been a lot of occasions like that. You know, and for this, what here in the mountains, it goes on before me. My dad used to talk about when they were teenagers that having rocks thrown at them in the mountains and stuff, and being run after but couldn't see it, and they always thought it was moonshiners doing it. And my mother, she used to talk about they would go to the theater. It was dirt roads back then, and the theater was, you know, the gathering place, the dance hall. And they would be followed on the way home and could hear the thuds on the dirt road but couldn't see anything. You know, this goes on, being paralleled. As you get off the bus sometimes going home, there's so much here. And I want to say I don't want to say untouched, but unnoticed. I'd say if anybody that had the, I'm sure not unnoticed in certain areas, but around here in these mountains, you know, there's so much that could be explained if it was checked into. But, you know, like I say, I'm by no means a researcher. I'm aware of what goes on, and I can show you some stuff.
I'll have to make my way down to Kentucky. I'd love to see. Just from the pictures you've sent me, you know, it's there's definitely some stuff going on in those woods. And it's interesting too, you know, a lot of times in those areas, I've never been to Kentucky, but I know like in the South, for some reason, a lot of those people up in the hills and, you know, country folks, they don't talk about it. I mean, if you can kind of pin them down and talk to them, they'll talk to you about it, but they're not real open about what's going on, but they're very aware of it.
It's part of life, Wes. It's part of life here. I mean, it's the best way to put it is someone told me not too long ago, it's like a black bear, a mountain lion, or anything else. Most of the people around here know they're real, but they don't want to think about it. That's it. But it's just a way of life. That's why you don't hear too much about it, you know. But there's so much untouched land. You know, the county I live in is biggest county in the state, and it's got a lot of government land, especially since the introduction of the elk and stuff. And you know, it's a lot of land that they could thrive in. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, I really need to make a trip to Kentucky. I'd love to see what you're seeing, and that's why I was impressed with some of your footprints, your photographs of the footprints. You know, I've photographed footprints before, and in person, you're like, wow, this is amazing. And then you get pictures of it, and the pictures don't look that great, and you're like, oh, man, this looks so good in person. But I know the ones you got were crystal clear.
Well, the footprint I showed you, the reasoning behind that is he keeps a drum of dog food up under his porch. He has a raised porch, and it's got a snap ring lid, and something had been getting the drum of dog food out, taking the ring off, eating out of it, and leaving it sitting 20 to 25 feet away from where its original place is, and he thought it was a bear. Well, the snow come, and this was, you know, it happened, and there was the footprints.
Now, who was this?
This is a person that has had some activity going on at their house here. He wanted to talk to me about it, and that's when we started doing a little digging. And the other picture I sent you, I don't know if you remember seeing it or not. It was along with it. That is a picture that he snapped as he was coming out of the hills deer hunting. Something had followed him forever, and he'd jump around, turn around, and nothing was there. Well, right before he came out of the tree line to go to his house, because he hunted right behind his house, he got his phone ready, kept walking, got the camera ready, and jumped around and snapped that picture. Now, I'm not saying anything other than what I see is a dark figure and a lighter figure, one smaller and one larger. I mean, it could be shadows or not, but he swears that it was two individuals. I don't know if you still have that picture, if you remember looking at it. I'm not one of those that could say either way on cloaking, but he told me it was like the Terminator. And if you look at the date on the picture, it was a little bit back.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and look at that one. This person had dog food that was being eaten constantly, and that's where you got the footprints. And that's a pretty big Sasquatch, because those footprints are huge. Did he have anything else going on around the property besides the dog food being eaten?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, certainly. The hitting on the side of the house, you know, he lives in a single-wide trailer, and it's elevated, you know, henceforth the elevated porch and stuff. And, yeah, that's the reason. And you know, two or three years ago, not a mile from that location, a good friend of mine called me. He said, "Hey, I need you to come up here," because he knows, you know, that I aware of this what goes on. And he lives at the mouth of this hollow, and there's no houses up in there. He owns all of it. It was wife's family does, and they had mined it years ago and left it, you know, and there's a nice pond. He's got a beautiful place up there the way he developed it. Well, he had this big spruce beside the pond. This is not a mile from the footprint area. He had this big spruce beside the pond. He called me to come up there. He had went up to the pond because something had stole a couple of his chickens. He had game chickens, and, you know, feathers had led that way a little bit. He was thinking coyote. Well, we get up there, and there is probably 12 foot diameter spruce boughs turned up, laid just like you would make a nest, just like you would see. They're all turned up, mind you, not down, turned up, laid in almost a complete circle. I mean, just in a perfect circle. Now, outside of those spruce boughs was scat, big piles of it all the way around it. And this was probably four and a half years ago, maybe five, that this happened. And, you know, back then, he may have pictures still, but I don't. But not of that. But that was unique. And then he started something had killed. He had a white German Shepherd that he raised since a pup, and it disappeared one day, and he never seen it no more. This was around the same time. Well, he was the one that initially contacted me to go talk to the fella with the dog food issue. And then we start talking, and they won't stay there without a loaded gun at night.
I don't blame him.
Him and his brother used to ride motorcycles back in there, because this butts up to a big, big job called Flatwoods here. And they would go back in there one day, and luckily got away, you know. But this, like I say, this area that I'm talking about has got a lot of activity, and it butts up to an enormous area, you know, that's secluded, and plenty of deer, plenty of game. And I'm starting to figure this out, Wes. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm starting to, through listening and gathering some information, if what is abundant, you know, the things they need to live on, and it's just coming together like a puzzle now.
Yeah, no, and it does come together. It starts to come together as a puzzle, you know, like a you're putting together a puzzle piece, and a little bit of information is like, it is. It's like putting together a puzzle. It's the best way to put it. The guy with the dog food, does he still have activity going on today?
Yes. Yes, he does. You know, and just here, and I'm going to be liberal and say a 30-mile radius west of, I know of 5-6 different locations of 5 or 6 different types of, you know, like I say, structures, so to speak, are different. And I never thought nothing about it, but sometimes it would be the most subtle thing that you would see, and most people would not even think nothing of it. But after knowing, and I guess it's said, I don't want to say knowing, but after learning some things, you know, the best way I can put that is there's probably no one in the world that's better than calls or knowing what to how to provoke stuff through calls than what Tim Kuhn, Bo Baker, and Buyer Jim King are. Would that be crazy to say? I've heard them countless times talk about the way they learned it, you know, through trial and error, I guess you could say. Well, some of the stuff that I've learned, and, you know, I get, like I have a relative of mine that we hunt together a lot, and if I stop, we'll be, say, going to a tree, or we'll be walking along the road, and I'll stop, and I'll see a tree break. Oh, no, that ain't nothing, don't start. And he's the biggest skeptic that I have in my life. I mean, he thinks it's all in my mind, and there's no changing his on that. And if I point out, I'll say, look, you see this tree twist? It twists to the right here, say, for instance, in Kentucky. Well, let me show you a picture of this same kind of tree twist in Washington State. Now, you're going to tell me that's all in my mind. You know, he's a big skeptic. But anyways, you know, that learning stuff is the way I by no means do I. I'm not any kind of researcher or nothing. It's just after you learn stuff, you see stuff, and you don't go looking for it, but when you notice it, you know, just because you know it exists, or you know that that's what that stuff, you know, what might make that stuff, I get ridiculed for that a lot. And, you know, I've learned over the years, I learned a lot of stuff. And when I go to areas, like I was telling you, I know 5 or 6 different areas that's got 5 or 6 different types of things that goes on. Like one thing that goes on in this area 15 miles from here, 5 miles from here, I've got something else going on that's totally different. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. I'm curious, the next time you see those tree twists, will you take a look and let me know if they're pointing towards water, just out of curiosity?
Pointing towards water, yeah. Yeah, certainly. You know, there's one case is next to a local high school here. There is a trail of breaks. All of them about the same height, about 7 feet. I'd say anywhere between 6.5 to 7 feet. And all the breaks are in the same direction. And this is within, say, 500 yards of a high school. And they all go up this long, long point to a ridge that goes into government land. And the only reason I found that is because we were hunting there one night, or hunting close to there, and the dogs got over in there close to where that was at, and I noticed it, you know. And the study, you know, it is it's the what I see out here and stuff, and the area I'm talking about, the same area, I don't know how true it is, but supposedly had a road crossing sighting about 3.5 years ago.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I know the tree break thing, I haven't figured that out by any means, but, you know, back when I was hunting, I know me and my brothers would go into areas, and if you're in an unfamiliar area and you don't want to get lost, what we would do is we'd break, you know, like little bushes, and we'd...
Exactly.
And that would be our way of, if you come across it again.
Certainly, we do that. You know, like I say, if we're in an area and we're going, the dogs are treed and we're going into them, and we want to make sure we come out the same way, you know, I know exactly what you're saying. We practice that today.
And I don't know if that's what they're doing. I've heard that they're pointing them towards water or food. Or you'll generally, if you see those, they're all in one direction, and it's usually going towards water and food. I don't know if that's true or not, but it made me think of, like, when I was hunting, just like you were saying, Dan. I mean, you're out in areas, you'll see hunters do that. They'll break bushes, they'll break that way when you come back, you know where you're, you know where you're at. You know you've done that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I've got some interesting pics of some twigs. And like I say, here lately, I've found more of those than I want to say normal. And some of them are pretty astounding. I have one, it may be an older twist, and it's in an area, and it's a locust tree. And I know you're familiar with locusts, Wes.
Yeah, yep.
You know how tough a locust wood is, you know, back
very
in,
tough.
Yeah, that used to be what fence posts were made of, you know, around here back for years. But this is pushed over and twisted, and it's just the sheer strength of whatever done this. You know, and it's no machinery. It's no nothing like that. This is no wind. I don't think it's an act of God, because and probably 11 miles away on another ridge, I can show you a similar twist, but it twists in a different direction, you know. But I'll send you some pics, you know, of what I've got and share with you. And, you know, if you don't care to look at them, give me some feedback. Tell me what you think.
Yeah, if you would, yeah, send them my way. I'd love to see what you're seeing. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with researching it, investigating this, or calling yourself a researcher. I know sometimes people, they hear me break the balls of researchers, but it's only the guys that are kind of arrogant, kind of dicks, that I like to break their balls on it. Because, you know, they got everything figured out. They'll tell you, I mean, they won't even stop to think before you ask a question. They got the answer ready for you, and no one has anything figured out. You know what I mean? And I love talking to guys like you, Dan, because, you know, you're out there all the time, and it's not half the time you're not even out looking for the things. You're out hunting, and you run into them, and you run into these weird structures. You run into these, and you know as well as I do, anytime a hunter says, hey, I'm seeing these tree breaks, or hey, I'm seeing this, and it's not weather, people might want to stop and listen to what they have to say, because most hunters know when it's weather. They know when it's, oh, you know, an elk came up and messed with this tree, and that's what you're seeing here, or this is something I've never seen before. You'll get that from hunters, you know. Hunters know.
They know. They do. And especially, you know, I've had people come forward here lately, and actually had two people come forward since this happened to my buddy and I down there, telling me, you know, because they had overheard me talking, you know, and they come and said, hey, you know, this happened to me, and I never wanted to tell nobody about it, and don't tell nobody, but they would tell me, you know, and then it's like, really? And this was in a totally different area that I, you know, I hadn't been hunting in, so, you know, but I don't, my biggest problem, Wes, is I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. You know, I'm not a researcher. I don't want to prove, disprove. I know it's real, and I just, more or less, I want people to be aware when they're in the woods. Don't go in the woods by yourself at night, no matter what. You know, be aware, because there is a true, real-life boogeyman out there. It's not no cuddly pet. It's not something that you want to take home and hug it and squeeze it and love it forever. There is something that will cause you bodily harm, take your life, cause you nightmare. I mean, not the I thought I had things in the perspective, to so to speak, until, you know, say 1994, whenever that big male crossed the road in front of me, and that really changed things forever for me. It's something I live with. I don't deny it. I'm not trying to prove or disprove. I'm trying to coexist and live with what I see. It's, I don't know, I, forgive me, but I almost feel like it's a curse. And that's how I feel sometimes, because it's knowing if I see an X marker, if I see a tree twist or a tree break, you know, I look to see if it's fresh or not. If I see a structure, if I find a footprint, you know, I start looking around, because it's not, people go through without knowledge that don't know. They'll never know, you know, they're unbeknown. But if you do know what to look for and you come across it, then it changes everything. It changes the ballgame. And I hate to use that term, but it does feel like a curse sometimes, because I have no outlet. That's it. Could that be what I'm trying to say? I have no outlet. You, what you're doing for people, Wes, is a blessing, because you are an outlet that they can they can share what they're holding in. You know, they can share what people should know. And I'm grateful for that to you.
Well, I appreciate that, Dan. I appreciate that a lot. And you're right. I'm with you on that. It does feel like a curse at times. And what do you do when you have all the evidence? You know, who do you take it to? And that's one of the biggest frustrations is what do you do with the stuff you're finding? And it's frustrating. It's very, very frustrating. And, you know, like I said, with you and your incident, I don't care how many, if you had an encounter 20 years ago and you have an encounter today, it's still as scary as the first encounter. But having said that, you don't go into freak out mode like if you've never seen it before, like your friend did. And I think that's how people wind up dead. I think that's how people wind up. These things may hunt people when they're out there. You may come across some of that. But I guarantee if you guys would have ran that night, they would have given chase. Or if you guys would have approached that big one, you would have had problems. And, you know, treat it like a grizzly bear. Just kind of slowly walk out, be cool, walk out of the area. And they'll generally kind of leave you alone. If you do anything else besides that, you're in trouble.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, he was ready to take flight and in the wrong direction because it would have went for miles with nothing around but water and woods. And who knows, you know. And the ironic thing is he got very emotional and thanked me afterwards. And I said, why? He said, because who knows what would have happened. And if you hadn't have went hunting with me tonight, I was coming in here by myself. And to think about that, it just... Well, I don't even want to think about that because who knows? That's the what if. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. That was the what if.
Well, be safe while you're out there. I'd love for you to send me those photos, and I can't thank you enough for coming on.
Anything you need, anything I can help you with, or, you know, if you're ever out this way, you're more than welcome here at our humble abode. And I would love to share some stuff with you. If you ever get this way, you just look me up. You know, you've got all my contacts, and I'll send you pics. And, again, if there's anything I could do, you just get with me. And I really appreciate everything you do, and I really appreciate you giving me the time to tell some of my life experiences here.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Have a good evening.
And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. Wes@SasquatchChronicles.com. If you get a chance, check out the website, SasquatchChronicles.com. Until next time, everyone, have a great night. We'll be right back.